Northwestern University presents The Reviewing Stand, a national radio forum in its 11th year on the Mutual Network. The program originates today in station WHKC Columbus, Ohio, as a special feature of the 16th Institute for Education by Radio under the auspices of Ohio State University. Today we discuss the question, are the schools doing their job? We shall consider the American high schools primarily, the educational needs of high school students, those who go on to college, and those who do not. What is the best way to prepare these young men and women for a place in our society? That is the issue. You can participate in these weekly discussions in two ways. Listen to the facts and opinions of the speakers. Read the printed word-for-word transcript of the discussion. $1 will bring you these pamphlets for the next 26 weeks, $2 for 1 year, 10 cents for a single copy. Write to the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois, or the Mutual Broadcasting System, Chicago, Illinois. James H. McBurney, Dean of the School of Speech, Northwestern University, is the moderator of today's discussion. Mr. McBurney.
Today we discuss the question, are the schools doing their job? We are especially interested in the secondary schools or high schools, 28,000 of them, trying to educate over 7 million young men and women. About 80% of these students conclude their formal education with the high school. About 20% go on to college. Educational change is bound to come and to come swiftly. Only the nature and direction of change may be controlled. This prediction we quote from the report of the National Education Association, a report entitled Education for All American Youth. The report goes on to spell out the needs of the high schools and to suggest the directions which change should take. Now, to open this discussion, I'm going to ask each of our speakers to give us his evaluation of the high school system and to suggest what changes he would propose. Our first speaker is Mr. Harlan H. Hatcher, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at The Ohio State University. May we hear from you, Dean Hatcher.
Bernie, the schools did a remarkable job in producing a resiliency of mind in their students, as was shown by the war, particularly the way they were able to take quick training when they had to. Likewise, it showed up the chief deficiency, which was that we have not given them any discipline in the fundamental things which are necessary for their progress, and I mean just plain calculation, reading, writing, and communication.
You're talking there about certain fundamental skills of communication. Our second speaker is Mr. William Selden, Director of Admissions at Northwestern University. Where do you stand on this question, Selden?
Our schools are doing a good job. This is the only conclusion one may draw in all fairness when one considers the multiplicity of problems facing the schools. We all will agree, however, that the schools are in need of much improvement, just as our society, on which the schools are totally dependent, is in need of much improvement. I therefore suggest a restatement of the question for our discussion today. How may the schools do a better job?
I'm certain that we'll want to consider that question as you phrased it, Selden. Our third speaker is Mr. Edgar Dale, Professor of Education at The Ohio State University. May we hear from you, Dale?
Well, I think our schools are doing a good job, but it isn't good enough. I think our schools are too academic, too bookish.
We're also happy to welcome to our Reviewing Stand microphone Mr. Gordon Hullfish, also a professor of education at The Ohio State University. May we have your point of view, Hullfish?
Yes, McBurney. We operate education on a shoestring, yet it is big business. Any non-public business so supported would cry under the heavens for government relief. The great weakness in education, then, is the public failure to understand that education cannot be healthy on a famine diet. The great strength in education is the devotion of those who keep the schools going. Do the schools within these limits do a good job? To answer, we must face another question. What is the educational purpose in a democracy? I submit the purpose is to teach the individual to think effectively as a member of a democratic society. On this score, the school not only fails in action, it fails, too, in so conceiving its job.
Well, now, I suggest we take up right where Hullfish left off there. He was talking about the objective of the high schools. Do you agree with the objective as he stated it, Hatcher?
I think the general objective he stated is right, of teaching people to think. But before they can be taught to think, they have to have something to think with and have to have some skills. And that's the reason I come back to this fundamental thing, which we're not getting in the present school system.
Well, now, let's get down to a consideration of some of the specific objectives, if we may. This report of the National Education Association, to which I referred earlier, places first in its list of needs, or if you prefer, objectives of the high school, this: all youth need to develop saleable skills and those understandings and attitudes that make the worker an intelligent and productive participant in economic life. To this end, most youth need supervised work experience as well as education in the skill and knowledge of their occupations. Now, that seems to be an emphasis on vocational training.
Well, McBurney, I think you're quite right, as you are in fact right, in saying that they place this first. Nevertheless, it is only one of a good many objectives, others including citizenship, development and the ability to think, and so on, which they list in order to get a balanced program. So, in fact, the NEA is not simply saying this should be a vocational emphasis.
Well, I agree with you on that point, except for the fact that if it is a balanced program, and if they had given thought to the listing of these items, they certainly would not have put vocational training first. We must face the problem that many at the present time are not as interested in obtaining jobs as others would desire. Nevertheless, I do feel that we must recognize the necessity of training and educating our youth in the values of our democracy and civilization.
Well, Selden, you may be right in an academic sense in saying that we should not place this vocational emphasis first, yet I think any time you consider the motivation of young people in this culture as we have created it in economic terms, that you must say that when they come to school, they want to find a way in which to adjust themselves to the culture, and therefore they are interested in what we are calling here the vocational interest.
I also would like to point out in reply to that, Hullfish, that in the schools we must try and give some leadership in the country and in the world. And if we plan to train our youth only for this society without trying to improve society, we probably are not doing our full job.
The difficulty with all this is that jobs are changing so rapidly, and the skills we give them in schools are not likely to be applicable after they get out. The schools ought to use their precious time to give them other things so that when they are ready for a job, they can train quickly in the service itself.
Well, now, what Hatcher just said there prompts me to introduce consideration of a second objective that receives considerable emphasis in another report on general education of considerable interest. This report comes from Harvard University, entitled General Education in a Free Society. And it emphasizes the importance of a liberal education for all high school youth. The humanities, social studies, science, and mathematics, with the student giving from half to two-thirds of his time to these general studies. Now, is that the kind of thing you're talking about, Hatcher?
That's what I'm talking about. It's in the right direction, at least.
Dale has a point of view on this.
I'd like to make this point. It seems to me that when we contrast vocational education with another kind of education, we're likely to make a mistake. It seems to me that one great advantage of the vocational education is that it is specific, and you can learn things specifically. But I don't think you can learn things generally. I like the term generalized education rather than specific education. Otherwise, we're going to have a conflict here between vocational education and general education. In other words, yes, I agree that we're going to have to train or educate people for general purposes, but don't we have to first do it specifically? Can't we do it through these vocational trainings?
I'm objecting primarily to the vocational education that's a job training in the schools, and then fundamentally I'd agree with what Dale has just said. We want specific in the sense that they're getting to do something themselves of their own interests specifically, but not just a job kind of training.
I think there is a danger in our discussion, as there is indeed a danger in this educational literature to which we have referred, of continuing this split between the vocational and the general, when, as a matter of fact, we want people in our society who, through their vocation, seldom rise to positions of leadership, and who do not get their leadership training off in one corner of life and then work without leadership concern in another corner of life.
Well, there's no question in my mind but in recent years, we have brought more closely into the school and into the teaching of our students the practical everyday of life. The question is whether we go to such an extent that we sacrifice some of the cultural values which we hope they will absorb.
Well, I'm wondering what will be the effect, though, of the introduction into the schools of a general, of a core of general cultural education, the sort of thing that the Harvard Report is talking about. Is that going to take us back to the kind of traditional high school that we had a few decades ago, the kind of high school that most of us attended?
It's going to take us a little nearer to it, but it's going to find some solution for the enormous extent of the subject matter which has been introduced in college, which tends to disperse the students. This is trying to draw them back again to a comprehension of the total as they did once when the fields were not quite so diverse.
Well, now, specifically, Hatcher, why are you interested in this common core, the humanities, the social studies, science and math, that would be required of all students?
I have a lot of interest, but I'll just take one. Going back to what Hullfish said a moment ago of teaching them to be, to think, and to live in this society, they can't do that unless they understand the world in which they're living. So I want them to have at least a core that would let them understand what the physical world is like and the biological world is like. They'll have to live with that. And what the humanities are like and the social agencies through which they'll have to work. And without a common core, I don't see how you can get it.
I'm wondering how far you can go in insisting on that kind of an education for all American youth in view of the enormous individual differences in intelligence, in social background, in the communities from which they come, in occupational interests and that sort of thing.
Seems to me, McBurney, that the whole problem there is the way in which you approach the teaching job. If you try in your teaching, as I think every teacher should indeed try, to deal with what is the interest and the concern of the student, then within a program of general education presented in the core experience that we are here talking about, each individual will be able to make his adjustment in terms of his interest. If we are simply talking about putting another kind of program in the schools that everybody is to take in the same way and at the same time, which quite ignores the interests of the individual, I don't think you can go very far, and I think you'll repeat all of the mistakes that education has now repeated in being so verbal and so abstract and so far removed from the life of the individual.
Well, now let's get very specific about this for a minute. In talking about this general cultural curriculum that would be given to all high school students, the Harvard Report deals specifically with the English curriculum, that in the humanities, which I think is your field, Hatcher. They recommend, for example, that the student be introduced to the great literature, that all students be introduced to great literature. Then they go on to say this: even though such work may seem to be over the heads of many in the class, these slower minds should not be allowed to leave without at least knowing that these topics are the primary preoccupation of mature minds, or without some idea, however vague, of what has been thought about them.
McBurney, before Hatcher can answer that, may I say simply that the emphasis placed in the Harvard Report right here is the evidence that they have turned rather intellectually to the problem of education. And if all of these minds listen to the same thing, when some are not prepared to listen, then I don't think we're going to have much improvement educationally.
I'd have to differ with my friend Hullfish on that, McBurney. You can teach these great pieces of literature on any level, almost from the kindergarten up till the PhD and professional level. The reason these books are great books and are so elected is that they have, from generation to generation, spoken to all kinds of people. And you can teach these that are suggested by the Harvard Report in the grade school, in the high school, in the college, and you should teach them there. And every boy ought to have some knowledge, at least on his level, of, shall we say, William Shakespeare.
What do you think about that, Selden?
Well, with the less strength, or rather, I should say, probably the less influence that the church and the family seem to have had in recent years in the development of our youth, that places more responsibility on the schools. It therefore seems to me that the schools must assume this responsibility, and in so doing must present a core which represents the basis of our society.
Well, is there really any debate as to whether or not there should be a core? Aren't we all agreed that students should learn how to read well, that they should learn how to write, that they should learn how to speak, that they should learn how to listen?
But there is a debate, Dale, if I may break in, because what you're talking about is just a repetition of the common learnings which are now presented in the school. And what we are discussing and what the Harvard Report and other comparable reports bring before us is that there shall now be a new content in the school. And the only point that I'm trying to suggest in my difference with Hatcher here is this:
that if we focus so much on the content that we neglect the interest and the learning condition of the student, then we'll simply substitute one content for another content, and I don't think there'll be much educational improvement.
Well, Dale, you were talking more of the tools that you learn in education. And that is important, but you must have something that you study when you've developed your tools.
I still don't see this element of disagreement. There is a problem of learning how to learn, and that's one thing we certainly have to do in the high school. We aren't going to finally finish with these things. We're going to learn how to read. We're going to learn how to read great books. And it seems to me that that's in a real sense what we have been doing in the high school. Now, I'll agree with Hatcher that we, although he hasn't said this, he's inferred it that we haven't done it well enough. But aren't we raising sometimes a false issue in regard to what the curriculum should be? Isn't the basic issue as to whether or not many of these things shall be much better taught?
Well, now, if I may speak to that, Dale, the issue that we're raising is this. That is, I think we are all recognizing here that we're interested in developing some of these basic skills. Skills in mathematical communication, in rhetorical communication. The ability to think, to deal with problems. But in what kind of material, what kind of content are you going to use in developing those skills? Now, it's Hatcher's position that the students are more likely to get them if they get their minds around some of the great books, if they get into the kind of content that this Harvard report is talking about. Now, do you agree with that?
Well, I think there may be some problem of prescribed content, but I think here I would probably work over more toward Mr. Hullfish's side in the sense that we ought to let the interests and needs of youngsters dictate perhaps more than we have in the past what this content shall be.
Now, of course, I don't want to be put over on the side which suggests that there is no content. I think the real issue is that some people look so much to the past for content that they never bring education in relationship to the present. And my concern is that the content that we use shall so operate inside of the present lives of young people that they will develop values which are appropriate to the present and not continually long for a past which is not to return.
That depends on the teaching to a large extent.
It also depends upon the curriculum. What we've got to have is to see that this great field of learning, which with life itself and the world, all split up now into so many departments that a student can't possibly get into them, that is drawn back into some kind of common core, and they can hit the real center of it over any interest they have, which may be botany, zoology, chemistry, physics, and yet the result can be the same and can still have a core.
I want to agree with Hatcher. It seems that we are moving to a kind of agreement here that's an important agreement.
Well, that represents an agreement which apparently is what we're striving for and gradually reaching in our society at the present time. The Harvard report and the NEA report both try and bring a more coordinated program and curriculum together through the high school and into the college.
And the real difference is that the NEA report comes closer to life than the Harvard report does.
Well, now, I think this analysis provides the basis for some discussion of the kind of jobs the schools are doing. We're beginning to see somewhat more clearly, I hope, what the objectives are. Let's consider first the 20% of the high school students who go on to college. Now, are these students adequately prepared for the colleges?
I'd have to answer that one and say, while many of them are adequately prepared in potentiality, they are not prepared in the sense of having had the discipline I spoke of at the outset. I mean, these fundamental skills without which they cannot proceed. So they fail chemistry, not because they're not able to understand chemistry, but because they do not know the language of chemistry, which is mathematics.
If there's a distinction to be made between these two reports, it is my reaction that the NEA report will not offer as much freedom for betterment for college than the Harvard report will. And I do believe that if we're interested in that group which goes on to college, from which, percentage-wise, there probably would be a larger number of leaders in the country, the Harvard report will offer a better opportunity along that line.
Provided, of course, says Selden, that the colleges change in the exact way that the Harvard report suggests that the colleges change. We cannot ignore the fact that when we raise this question about preparation for college, that we're dealing with two things which are in change. One is the high school, and one is the college. I think we have not prepared students too well for college, chiefly because we've been too much concerned with preparing them for a college which is no longer in existence.
Well, there's a definite movement in that direction in our college education, particularly in the liberal arts programs. You'll find many of your colleges during the war were reevaluating their curricula and making changes in them. The Harvard report is trying to bring a synthesis of those two together.
I'd like to say not only in the colleges, but even in such professional schools as the Navy's school at Annapolis. They're actually throwing out many of the formerly required specific professional courses in order that they might include some of the things that have not been in there, namely history and political science.
And I would like to say that there has been in this country, conducted under the Progressive Education Association, a very elaborate study of 30 high schools over an 8-year period, which indicates that there are many ways in which to be prepared for college, and under any one of them, you may do successful work in college.
Now, that suggests a criticism of the typical college entrance requirements. Do you mean it that way?
I mean it exactly that way.
How do you feel about that?
Well, from my experience in college admissions, I have found that those who have taken what we call the typical college preparatory subjects are generally better prepared for college and will prove themselves better. If we find, for example, the student who is interested in engineering and has had no algebra or geometry, he is quite likely rather unfit to carry on with a program of that type in college. With respect to Latin, although I hold out no particular brief for Latin, we do find that those who generally have had Latin in school and done well will probably be better college students.
I'd like to say, in connection with the Ohio scene, for example, where we now are, there are only two things required in the high schools. One is physical education, and the other is a unit in American history or civil government, which means the students can completely ignore any number of these fields that I spoke of earlier, which are absolutely fundamental to their success in college. I agree with Hull Fish, potentially they're able to go on and should be admitted. But we've got to do something for them to get them ready to go on with their course. And I would say it'd be much better to have a coordination between what they're going to do in college and what they're doing down in high school.
But in the meantime, what are you going to do with all of these GIs? Many of them young men who had no intention of going on to college, largely because they didn't see an opportunity to do that. The GI Bill of Rights now gives them that opportunity. They've had a high school education which doesn't meet entrance requirements of colleges.
I think we can do one of two things. We can hold the requirements fast and thereby push the GI aside and tell him to get himself ready to come up to that which we hold as sacred. We can do another thing. We can begin changing our own requirements in order to adjust to these people who have purpose and who have concern.
We don't hold these things sacred only in the sense that they can't go on into the things they want to do, like engineering, unless they've had math. So we have, in most institutions, and here at Ohio, we have provided on almost any level for these GIs. We admit them on examination or with high school, and we take them where they are and try to get them as quickly as possible up to the point where they can do the proper work.
It seems to me that most of the studies show that if these students come to college with excellent reading ability and with good study abilities and with certain character traits, they do well no matter what the pattern of preparation is in the high school.
But you would admit they would go faster and do better if their pattern of high school had been a little better coordinated toward, for example, their work in chemistry.
I would agree.
You have to recognize the fact that you are speaking from one of the largest universities in the country, where you have a very great multiplicity of courses which these students may select. Recall that there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of smaller colleges which offer a more narrow curriculum, and you can't change that curriculum overnight. There is where the great difficulty is arising for many GIs.
Well, should we restrict our curriculum then merely to get these students into a highly formal college?
I think we might follow Dale up there and say simply this, that some of us in these large institutions would rather like to be confronted with the situation of smallness, because there we might do a job of experimentation in terms which is not available to us in a situation as large as this.
Well, now, gentlemen, let's see if we can make some rather specific recommendations here. We've been talking about the high schools, the kind of job they're doing, and I think many suggestions are implicit in what we've been saying. This has occurred to me throughout this discussion. The kind of educational program that you gentlemen are talking about here for the high schools, and I don't think we're too far apart, is going to place a very high premium on good teaching. Is there any question about that?
No question whatsoever.
If there is no question about it, how are we going to get those teachers?
May I say one thing right off, that we must make teaching a high-grade, recognized profession on an equality with other professions which require a comparable training.
Well, that means two things, I think. Much higher salaries, it means much greater selection of teachers. That's the way they got good teachers in the Army.
And it means a third thing, Dale, if I might interrupt, and that is that out in this community, there shall be a kind of respect for the teacher which is not always present in the community as we see them. And that would say that those who administer schools should give people an opportunity to participate in schools with intelligence and with effectiveness so that they feel a share in the work of the school and are not simply people who take orders from the person in charge.
Dale, you speak of a greater selectivity in teachers. With that, I'm in complete agreement. I would also say that our educational system will depend entirely on the students and the teachers themselves. Nevertheless, in connection with the selection of teachers, we are confronted with many state requirements which prevent us from selecting certain teachers in our schools as contrasted with what happens in our private schools, secondary schools. And I think that there should be some freedom in the training of the teachers with regard to the state requirements of having this course, that course, and the other course.
Of course, that suggests, Selden, that you actually believe that these state requirements do not, in fact, make for better teaching. I think that is a very debatable point.
No, I would say that they probably raise the minimum standard, but tend to restrict the maximum standard in selection of teachers.
I'd like to make one other point in reference to what can be done in the high school. I think we have to have a much richer variety of teaching materials. We've got to have students working in the community. We've got to have more films, radio, recordings, and the like.
On this matter of state requirements, I think there is much to be said. I do feel, however, that this whole matter can be tackled and tackled directly if we raise salaries, if we give dignity to the job of teaching, and if in the process those in education and those in liberal arts, like Hatcher, will bring their thinking together to see that we want citizens for a democratic society, therefore we must have teachers who can do that kind of job.
May I add further that they'll have to have a little better curriculum for these professional teachers to work in once we get them.
With that, I'll agree.
Now, gentlemen, I think we can draw about three conclusions from this discussion. First, if our people are to meet the responsibilities of a democratic society, the high schools must provide a substantial program of general or liberal education for all students, a program designed to develop basic skills in thinking, reading, speaking, and writing. Dale has emphasized that. Hatcher's emphasized that. I think we're all pretty much in agreement on it. Special education will take the form of vocational education for the non-college group, and for the college group, it will consist in specialized college preparatory studies. There's been insistence throughout this discussion that we not emphasize the distinction between vocational and general education. To be effective, these changes will require, I think, a rather strict limitation of the elective system. We haven't said much about that this morning, but I think it's implicit in what we've said. A curriculum which is organized in terms of contemporary problems, which has been one of Hullfish's points. And above all, these proposals place a high premium on well-prepared, adequately paid teachers.
Thank you, gentlemen. You have been listening to the Northwestern University Reviewing Stand discussion, Are the Schools Doing Their Job? We invite you to subscribe now for copies of the Reviewing Stand weekly discussions. $1 for the next 6 months, $2 for an entire year. A printed copy of today's discussion may be purchased for 10 cents in coin. Write to the Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois, or to the Mutual Broadcasting System, Chicago, Illinois. Participating as guests today were Harlan H. Hatcher, Dean of Arts and Sciences, Ohio State University, Gordon Hullfish, Professor of Education, Ohio State University, William Selden, Director of Admissions at Northwestern University, and Edgar Dale, Professor of Education, Ohio State University. Our moderator, James H. McBurney, will now tell you about next week's program.
Next week, we discuss the question, can we break the black markets? Guest speakers will be Amos Kaufman, Regional Enforcement Attorney for the OPA, Edward L. Cleary, General Manager of the Chicago Automobile Trade Association, and Arthur B. Maurer, President of the National Independent Meatpackers Association. We invite you to listen.
The Northwestern University Reviewing Stand is broadcast coast to coast every week as a public service feature of Mutual. Bud Sweeney speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.